Okay, good afternoon, folks. Hope you enjoyed your lunch. I'm going to be talking about the Federal Reserve Bank, which says just ugly. It's not good, it is bad, and it's ugly. And most of my material comes from a book called The Creature from Jekyll Island by Edward Griffin. And I had the pleasure and honor to escort him through New England and New York back when his first book tour in 1994, I think. And I interviewed him on a cable TV station, and that interview is on YouTube, and various people have uploaded it. And I've read the book. It's about 600 pages long. And if you're a real serious student of it, I recommend it. There's another book, which I might mention. I think I have a picture of it. It's called Financial Terrorism. And the book came out a year before, much smaller pages. And I would kid the author. I said, we call it a wee drop of the creature. And I don't hear too many people laughing, but if you live up in New England and you have Irish extraction, you know what that means. I've had the blessing of understanding a little bit about the money issue as a young boy. I'm 60 years of age. My dad had a little small drugstore that I mentioned earlier, and I worked there since I was 8. And he had a great candy counter. You remember the 5-cent candy? The Welch's Fudge Bar and all that great stuff. And there was a movie theater a few doors down, so the kids would come in and buy the candy and give us silver dimes and silver quarters. See, this was late 60s, early 70s. You could still find a lot of silver coins and even half dollars and an occasional silver dollar that somebody might give you. And I started collecting coins, and I knew that anything before 64 and before, or if it was a Kennedy half from 65 to 68, 40% silver, you would take it out. Gresham's Law, as was mentioned by Martin Salbrady, that bad money chases good money out. I also became a coin collector as a young boy, and I had a lot of fun going to downtown Boston, hopping on a trolley and then a subway. There was a little coin shop, a little tiny small place, no more than 3 people could fit in there, and they had a lot of high-end coins. They always made time for me, though, because they're looking at future coin dealers. And one day a man is in there. He thought he had a very valuable coin. It was a silver dollar with a Carson City Mint. And the man, the coin dealer looked at it and he said, "It's worthless." The guy said, why are you saying that? It's worth a few thousand dollars in the book. It's extra fine condition. So he put the dollar on the tip of a pencil eraser, and he got another coin and he rang it. He hit it and it went clunk. Then he got a real silver dollar, and it rang. It had a bell tone. It had a nice little ring to it. So he said this was a counterfeit coin. They used to do that there was the Liberty Nickel when it first came out in, I think, early 1880s. They just had a V on the back, and some people would gold plate it and pass it off as a $5 gold piece. So they got wise to it. So there was counterfeit coins. And the Eisenhower, everybody remember the Eisenhower dollar? After Eisenhower passed away, they put him on a dollar. It was a so-called silver dollar, but it was just copper and nickel and maybe some zinc. And you made that same clunky sound that Carson City counterfeit coin made. So what was illegal has now been taken over by the government. In fact, at one time, to counterfeit a coin was a capital offense. And now the government is involved in capital offense. So, the Federal Reserve Bank, just ugly. And here is a picture of Jekyll Island, Georgia, where a meeting happened in November of 1910. Who has ever heard of the secret meeting at Jekyll Island? Okay, so you experts will probably take notes and tell me what I said wrong, right? It correct me, but that's okay. That's okay. Actually, who's been to this island? It's now a hotel resort. So some of you have been there. It was owned by J.P. Morgan, who was one of the most wealthiest men of the time. Okay, so the stated purpose of the creation of the Fed was to stabilize the economy and end bank runs. But the real goal was to end competition. It was John D. Rockefeller Sr. that said competition is a sin. And the goal was to get, and I want to point out too that the Federal Reserve Bank is not federal in the strict sense. It's not a reserve and it's not a bank. So I say you tell 3 lies when you say Federal Reserve Bank, okay? By 1913, there were over 20,000 banks. 71% were non-national holdings, 50% of deposits. So they were a little concerned about this, right? The Federal Reserve established December 23rd, 1913, unconstitutional ever since. And it was Article 1, Section 8, Clause 5 that talks about only coins would be used, gold and silver, but gold especially. And this took over that. And so, and also too, that it was 2 days before Christmas. A lot of the people voted for this weren't even there. Do they still do things like that? You know, they still do. They pass some bills when there's only a handful of people, enough for a quorum sometimes. Now, a lot we've learned about the Federal Reserve Bank comes from a man named Frank Vandalip. He was one of the attendees. He represented the National City Bank, the Rockefeller interest. He wrote a book, his autobiography, about a year before he passed away. It was called Farm Boy to Financier. And it was serialized in the Saturday Evening Post. Well, it was about 10 years ago, a friend of mine said, "Hal, I want that chapter. If you can find that chapter that talked about the secret meeting," he said, "I'll put it back, you know, I'll pay to put it in print." It took me about 3 years. Now, I didn't spend every waking moment looking for it, but I let people know around the region. And I found a version online. You can go to the Saturday Evening Post. It was a weekly publication. And every single magazine issue in a PDF format except for that particular week. Then I found a version that was so, it was illegible. It was online, but you couldn't read it. And then one day, a friend of mine up in Maine said, "Hal, I found a copy of the book." I said, "Where'd you get it?" "Oh, a yard sale. I think I paid 50 cents for it." The book was listed on Amazon for $1,500. So, and then he sent me had the magazine. So he found the magazine in some kind of antique shop. And my friend, true to his word, he paid the money to put it in print, and we put it into print. I have copies of that. You see a picture of it there. Just the article, just the chapter about the secret meeting. And he said, Mr. Vandalip said, "We were as furtive as any conspirator." And there was some talk about this secret meeting. And they didn't use the term conspiracy theory. That wasn't used until after JFK was assassinated, I think. But they used terms like that. They said, "Oh, that never happened." There was a couple of articles, but without any substantiation, just speculation. But then this came out, and he basically admitted what they did there. And now here were some of the attendees. And some of the historians have said about one-fifth of the world's wealth was represented there. It was pretty fascinating. Jekyll Island meeting, one-fourth of the world's wealth was represented. Nelson Aldrich was the maternal grandfather of the Rockefellers. You know, he married a Rockefeller. He was from Rhode Island, and you can actually rent out his estate for a meeting. I was thinking about doing that, inviting Ed Griffin there, because he actually used Jekyll Island for functions, too. You can also rent out Mount Washington Hotel, where the IMF was founded back in 1944, Bretton Woods. Henry Davidson, he was a partner with J.P. Morgan. Charles Norton, he was the First National Bank. A. Piatt Andrew, he was the assistant secretary of the Treasury. Benjamin Strong, J.P. Morgan, and he became the first head of the Fed. And also a man named Paul Warburg. Now, Paul Warburg was from Germany, and he became instrumental in the founding of the Fed. He was the character Daddy Warbucks. Remember the little orphan Annie? And if you ever play the game on the Monopoly, the little banker guy, that was Paul Warburg. That was supposed to be a caricature of Paul Warburg. Now, Paul Warburg was a multimillionaire. Now, $1 million was $1 million back in 1913 or 1910. It's, you know, be a whole, and he, when he worked for the Fed, he took a little paycheck. And I'm thinking, did he do it because he was just a great patriot? Or what about insider information? That could have been it. So it was quite a interesting event here. Now, Frank Vandalip, as I mentioned, and he was represented the William Rockefeller interest. And what came out of that was the Aldrich plan. Aldrich was a Republican. And by the way, in those days, There was a lot of Republican so-called progressives. They were people leftists. I hate the word progressive because socialism isn't progressive, it's retrogressive, but another word they steal. Howard Taft had been president, was president at the time, and he was against the Federal Reserve Bank. Even though he was somewhat of a left-leaning progressive, he was against the bank. Teddy Roosevelt, on the other hand, was a supporter of the bank, and they had a very interesting election in 1912. 1912, Taft ran against Wilson, who was a big supporter of the bank, and old Teddy Roosevelt threw his hat in the ring as a member of the Bull Moose Party. And his campaign manager was a man named Raymond Roberts. Roberts later went to the Soviet Union and helped bankroll the Bolshevik Revolution. Now, that's another topic for another time. But definitely worth. In fact, it's mentioned in the book Creature from Jekyll Island. And so Teddy Roosevelt, no doubt, took away a lot of delegates, a lot of votes away from Taft, and Wilson won. Wilson, who was a Democrat, he was also very sympathetic to the Ku Klux Klan, another topic for another time. And it became reality. Now, here's a man, Colonel Edward Mandel House. Colonel House was Wilson's Kissinger, but he wasn't known outside of the intimate circles. He lived in the White House, and in 1912, he wrote a novel called Philip Drew Administrator, where he was talking about a communist America. Franklin Roosevelt was given a copy of that by his mother. And the term fireside chats they used to have, it came out of this book here. But this guy, Edward Mandel House, was one of the key persons involved in the creation of the Federal Reserve Bank and the founding of the Council on Foreign Relations. And he was living in Magnolia, Massachusetts, which is where, in Gloucester. He was actually originally from Texas. He was on his deathbed when Franklin Roosevelt got the nomination in Chicago, and old Frank Roosevelt went to see him and say, basically, we're back in business. I got the nomination. Here we have, the Aldrich plan was rejected because it was considered Republican. So it was a banker bill. So they just gave it to the Democrats that were considered to be the anti-bankers. It became the Glass-Owen bill, and that was passed. And it was passed in, like I said, December 23rd, 1913. That was a very bad year for our republic. We also got the 16th Amendment about that same time, income tax. We got the inheritance tax. If you look at the Communist Manifesto, there are 10 planks. One of them is a central bank. One of them is a progressive tax, income tax. And one of them is no inheritance tax. The Federal Reserve Bank isn't owned by the government. As Ed Griffin pointed out, it's a cartel between the banks and the government. So that's why you've never seen an audit of the Fed, other than they did a minor audit, but not a real audit of the money, where it comes from, what have you. And really, a lot of people are concerned about who actually owns the bank. The action isn't in the tangible assets. It's in the interest they charge on this paper money, this phony money, this fiat money. But fiat money means money that you have to accept because the government makes it so. So the Federal Reserve Bank is made up of the National Board of Governors, 7 members, 14-year terms, 12 regional reserve banks hold reserve supplies, currency to member banks, the Open Market Committee, members are the Board of Governors and the 5 of the 12 regional bank presidents, and the president of the New York Reserve. So the New York Reserve is really the power base. There's one in Boston, Atlanta, I think there's one in Philadelphia, St. Louis, and some others. But the base is really in New York City and Washington, D.C. The president does appoint the chairman of the Fed. Remember Alan Greenspan? Alan Greenspan was supposed to be this wise, noble soul. He had been a Randian. He was a big supporter of the gold standard. And he changed awfully quick, didn't he? And I remember watching him on C-SPAN, he was testifying against a tax increase. But then a year later, he's in favor of a tax increase. So the guy was all over the map, and it would take him 100 words to say something that you could say in 3 words. So he was this giant intellect, but he was really he was a bad guy. He was manipulating So here, we were told that the Federal Reserve Bank would stop the bank failures, stop all of the evils, the bank runs. Everybody watched the movie It's a Wonderful Life, you know, the scene where there's a bank run. But the Federal Reserve hasn't done that. And I get some pictures of money here, some bills. We had silver certificates and gold certificates. It was called, it was gold back, and it would say, if you took it to the bank, it would say, pay to the bearer on demand $20 with an ounce of gold, not $20. Then you end up with, the last one was a silver certificate that was abolished in 1963. Well, you can go to a bank and get a silver dollar. You know, that the price of silver. Another thing, too, is how they manipulated the price of gold. It was Franklin Roosevelt, when he passed a law, executive order, making it illegal to own gold. I think it was about $22 an ounce. And then he just arbitrarily raised the price to $35. And they would set the price, his little group of advisors, they just arbitrarily set the price. Nothing to do with supply and demand or what have you. And also, there were contracts made for the payment in gold. He voided all those contracts. So we had a lot of problems with people who didn't understand the Constitution way back then, because most people gladly turned the money in to the federal government. Thanks to Ron Paul and others back in the 70s, they made gold ownership legal again. So today we have a Federal Reserve note. And a Federal Reserve note is what we call fiat money. And we call it a bill. How many people get bills in the mail? Phone bill, electric bill. Do you take that bill and you spend it? You know, if you went to the grocery store with your phone bill, they'd laugh at you. Get out of here, dude, you know? Well, how about if I give you a Federal Reserve note? We'll take that. That is an instrument of debt. And if we paid off the national debt, guess what would happen? Those bills would be out of circulation. It's not really hard to get your hand around that, isn't it? So, anyway, I've got a little time left. Okay, so, and the Fed. It is incapable of accomplishing its stated objective. It is a cartel operating against the public interest. It is a supreme instrument of usury. It generates our most unfair tax, inflation. It encourages war. It destabilizes the economy. It is an instrument of totalitarianism. Say that three times fast, right? And so I was so glad that there is such a movement now around the country to abolish the Fed. And that's our sign. We were at a rally not too long ago in Boston. And I had a lot of DVDs on the subject, and we were actually right in front of the Fed, and I call my children secret weapons. When they were a little younger, they were handing them out to all the people going into the Fed bank. You know, they wouldn't take them from guys like us. We would have got arrested, but they're taken from my 8-9-year-old homeschooled children. And so here are the three books I recommend is Lott's Financial Terrorism, The Creature from Jekyll Island, and Ron Paul's End the Fed. Time's up, so I want to thank you for your attention, and God bless.